stated, I'll be talking to you about coupled heat and water transfer in wettable and non-wettable soils. This is work I'm doing for my graduate study at Iowa State University under the supervision of Dr. Robert Horton and in collaboration with Drs. Josh Heitman and Dr. Tushang Ren. So when we talk about coupled heat and water transfer in soil, what we're basically referring to is that we have the movement of heat and the movement of soil and the movement of water occurring in soil at the same time. And when this happens, one affects the other and vice versa. Now, coupled heat and water transfer plays an important role, particularly near the soil surface and in physical processes such as evaporation, as we see here, where we have radiation that enters at the soil surface, which is here, and is transported as soil heat throughout the soil. And this creates a temperature gradient and also causes the soil to dry from the surface downward. In response to this temperature gradient and also the drying of the soil, a matrix potential gradient is created between the dry and the cool and moist soil here. In response to this matrix potential gradient, we have the movement of liquid water from the cool and moist soil below back to the dry soil and eventually to the soil surface where it is evaporated. Now, coupled heat and water transfer has been long recognized in soil, but one of the things is that these coupled processes have not been well quantified, and we must be able to quantify these processes in order to gain an improved understanding of the mechanisms involved. Philip and DeVries, which is probably the most notable work, developed the diffusion-based theory for describing coupled heat and water transfer in unsaturated soil. And from that diffusion-based theory, others have developed theory to account for the effects of hysteresis, osmotic potential, and most recently, Heitman et al. Provided theory evaluation by using multiple initial and boundary conditions to test this theory. However, an area that has received limited attention is the area of water repellency and its effect on coupled heat and water transfer in soil. And some of you might be wondering, why water repellency? I tend to ask, why not water repellency? One reason that I ask why not is because water repellency has become accepted as the norm rather than the exception. This is a statement that you'll see in a lot of papers related to soil water repellency. And also there have been studies on soil water repellency and its effects on evaporation. And these studies have shown that evaporation tends to reduce studies on evaporation and water repellency show that evaporation is reduced by water-repellent soils as opposed to their wettable counterparts. Another important thing is that current theory assumes a contact angle of zero, which means the soil is perfectly wettable. And as I've stated before, this could no longer be true because water repellency has been accepted as the norm rather than the exception. So the question that we wanted to ask is, does soil water repellency affect coupled heat and water transfer in response to thermal gradients? And our hypothesis to this question is soil water repellency affects water redistribution in response to thermal gradients because in a non-wettable soil, water vapor moving from hot to cold regions where it is evaporated cannot return as liquid flow to the hot regions. And just to illustrate this, if we take a look here at this closed soil pipe system where we've applied a temperature gradient, and this is assuming a wettable soil here, so no water repellent soil. We have the wettable soil here. Once we apply that temperature gradient, we'll have water that evaporates and moves as water vapor towards the cold end where it condenses. But because the soil is drying out here at the hot end, liquid water returns back to the hot end to compensate for this matrix potential gradient. But if we have a non-wettable soil, we'll still have the evaporation of water here at the hot end, and this water vapor moves to the cold end where it accumulates. We cannot expect this liquid water to return because we have a non-wettable soil. So we expect an increase in the water content here in the cold region of the soil column. So in order to answer this question and to test this hypothesis, we use two soils, an Ida silt loam and a Hanlon sand. And for each soil, we had two conditions. a wettable soil and an unwettable soil. We hydrophobized our soil with dichlorodimethylsilane, and this helped us to achieve a contact angle of 130 degrees. And the water contents that we used, the initial water contents that we used, were well below the critical water contents we have here for these two soils. In order to produce our thermal gradient, we used the instrumented column within a column approach of Heitman et al. From 2007. And if you look here, at the bottom we have a heat exchanger that is connected to a water bath that serves as our lower boundary of 22.5 degrees. On top of this bottom heat exchanger, we have two columns. We have an inner column, which is denoted by this boundary here and this boundary here, and an outer column, which is denoted by this boundary and this boundary. The inner column serves as our control volume for this study. And within that inner column, we have installed thermal TDR probes at various depths. And then once we have the inner column packed and the probes installed, we then pack the outer column to the same bulk density as that of the inner column. And this outer column helps to ensure 1D heat movement and not any lateral movement of heat within that column. Once we've packed that column, we then place the top heat exchanger, which is also connected to a water bath at 37.5 degrees, and this serves as our upper boundary. Now, as I've stated, the instrument that we used was the thermal TDR probe. And this is probably the ideal instrument to use because it combines the technology of the heat pulse probe and the TDR probe. But most importantly, it provides a non-destructive and in-situ way of measuring soil temperature, soil thermal properties, and water content. So after imposing our temperature gradient, we can see we have the results here. And the results that I first present are for the sand soil. The graph on the left-hand side is the wettable sand, and the graph on the right-hand side is the non-wettable sand. The x-axis of both graphs is distance from the cold end, and the y-axis is the change in theta from the initial condition, so the change in water content from the initial condition. So if we look at the wettable sand first, we can see one day after we've imposed the temperature gradient, we have very little water redistribution from the initial condition, as we see here. However, as we get to a week, we can see that the water content at the hot end of the soil column has decreased by more than 3%, while the water content at the cold end of the column has increased by roughly 4%. And then as we go to day 14, or 2 weeks afterwards, we can see that we've had a further decrease in the water content here, indicating the drying of the soil, while the water content here is increased, indicating that we have condensation of water at the cold end. However, when we come over to our non-wettable sand, we can look at day one. There's very little water redistribution after one day after we've imposed this temperature gradient. And then to go even further to day 7 and 14, we can see that there's still very little water movement within this column. So we now must ask ourselves the question, what does this mean, and what does it mean in relation to our hypothesis? When we look at the wettable silt loam, our second soil, we can see we still have the same trend for both soils. And again, the axes are the same, where we on the x-axis we have distance from the cold end, and the y-axis we have the change in water content. And again, looking at the wettable soil first and the wettable silt loam here, we can see, again, after day one, very little change in the water content from the initial condition. However, by the time we get to day 14, we can see that the water content has decreased here at the very end, or closest to the hot end, by more than 4% here, while the water content at the cold region has increased by roughly 8% here. And in comparison, when we look at the non-wettable silt loam, we can see that we have a decrease in water content after 14 days here at the hot end, and an increase in water content here at the cold end. And this is after 14 days. But the one thing to note about this is when we compare this graph here with this graph here, we can see this increase in water content is roughly half of what we experienced here for the wettable soil. So what does this mean? And again, what does it mean in relation to our hypothesis? So if you remember our hypothesis, we said soil water repellency affects water redistribution in response to thermal gradients. Because in non-wettable soils, water vapor moving from hot to cold regions of soil cannot return its liquid flow to the hot soil regions. So basically what we've said is that we would see reduced liquid flow. And this is just a hypothetical graph here that would confirm this hypothesis. If this was true, we can see we have the initial condition here. But after some time that we've imposed the temperature gradient, we can see for the non-wettable soil and the wettable soil, we have decrease in water content due to evaporation from the hot end of the soil, due to evaporation from the hot end of the soil column. And then this water vapor comes here and accumulates in the cold region for both soils. However, if we look at the non-wettable soil, we can see that the water content, the change in water content for the non-wettable soil relative to the wettable soil will be greater. And the reason for this is because we expected no liquid water flow to return back to the hot end in the non-wettable soil because it is non-wettable, therefore increasing the change in water content. Also, if that was to occur, we would expect increased drying here in the non-wettable soil, resulting in a greater change of water content here on the hot end of the soil water, of the soil column. However, again, this is not what we had. What we can infer is that we saw reduced vapor flow because if we look here, our wettable silt loam is at the top. It's the top graph, and our non-wettable silt loam is here. We can see that the change in water content at the cold region of the soil column was greater for the wettable silt loam than for the non-wettable silt loam. The only reason that water could move or increase at the cold region is because of vapor flow. And this is why we expect vapor flow was reduced, is because if that's the case in this non-wettable soil here, the water content would have increased much more greatly than the water content here. So some possible reasons as to why this might be happening is what is happening with the processes of condensation and evaporation in these soils. One thing that has been found is that when you have a non-wettable surface, the surface area for evaporation is less than that compared to wettable surface. And also we must ask what is happening with diffusion. Even though we've packed these columns to the same bulk density and the same initial water content, could diffusion play a role in this reduced vapor flow? So in conclusion, I think the two points that we can take away are soil wettability reduced the redistribution of water under non-isothermal conditions, and having a non-wettable soil reduced the water redistribution in the vapor phase. I'd like to acknowledge the National Science Foundation for funding for this project and for graduate study, and also the ISU Soil Physics Group. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Question on that commentary also. Just the question is how long was your column, the soil?
The column is 10 centimeters in height.
10 centimeters?
Yes.
Okay. So just maybe, did you try to use natural hydrophobic soils instead of hydrophobic the soil by
Yes, we haven't used any naturally hydrophobic soils, and I think it's probably due more so because we're in central Iowa and it would be hard to obtain those, but again, that is a good point. And with those naturally hydrophobic soils, if that was the case, I would expect that water repellency to be moisture content dependent also. So.
Yes.
We have did some work with water retention. However, this has been more so geared to the dry end. And what we're planning on doing is also measuring water retention within the range of our initial conditions used in this study. So that is something we're going back and planning on doing. planning on doing.
Can you find the difference?
Yes, we did find a difference in water retention of the wettable and the non-wettable soils. But again, I say this is was limited to the very dry range of water contents in that study.
Yes.
Okay, what how did you vet your farms? And are they homogeneous? If they are, how do you make sure they are?
I would say we packed our columns, but we packed them as carefully as we possibly could. We did not check to see if they were homogeneous, but we also expect some noise to occur because of the packing, and we know that the packing of the hydrophobic soils is a little bit more difficult than that of the wettable soils. So that introduces some noise, but also we have noise that comes from a thermal TDR probe that we have to take into account. But again, as far as using any other techniques to make sure we had a uniform bulk density or packing conditions, we didn't have any.
I'm wondering, do you think the hydraulic gradient from the wet end to the dry end would be different between the wettable and the non-wettable? And what kind of effect that might have, just sort of hypothetically?
Hydraulic gradient?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the water content gradient, so you've got that measured, but I'm curious about the hydraulic gradient, which is going to be the driving force for liquid water.
I would expect that hydraulic gradient to be different between the wettable and non-wettable soils, but I would say that hydraulic gradient probably would play a greater role in the wettable soils as opposed to the non-wettable soils. So,
great. Thank you very much.